Yes, honey.
Ramsey Clark on line two.
Manpower problem, but the burdens can be fully met. Manpower. He has, he thought his letter made this perfectly clear, that he thinks the problem is the stuff that is sent to Fulbright, that Fulbright won't make a show of it at the hearing. That, of course, any meeting that I put in terms of Secretary Rush might be able to be desirable with any of the Senate leaders tomorrow about this. Happy to attend. Tell them that. He doesn't think the meeting's necessary. I think he would attend. I think if you were there, why, he would anyone who wanted to be reasonable about it would have to say that Mr. Hoover has no objection to this at all and doesn't feel it poses any security risk.
Russ, can't have any feeling about what whether they ought to be a meeting or not.
He said that he thought, first he said, I think you may be making too big a thing of it. Then he said he thought you would know more about how these senators might feel. He finally said that he thought if we met at 6, and he also said he was afraid they might feel kind of an imposition to come in on Sunday. Finally said that he thought a meeting might be on the plus side if we met about 6 minutes.
Let me check it and I'll get back to you.
Okay, sir.
I'll get right back to you.
Two other things,
sure.
Quickly, if you want me to
sure.
Run by you. Would you care for a history of, I can give it to you in about 3 minutes probably, of the appearance of presidents, request for presidents to testify in
the yep.
Court through the history of the United States. First time was in Aaron Burr's trial. Aaron Burr sought to subpoena from President Jefferson a letter that he thought would be relevant to his defense. Chief Justice Marshall had this long-standing personal feud with Jefferson. He happened to be the circuit judge who was sitting on the case, and he issued a subpoena. Jefferson ignored the subpoena, never returned it, never answered it to the court. He wrote the district attorney and said that this is ridiculous. Can't subpoena the President of the United States. I do not intend to appear. They can get this evidence from other sources if they want it anyway. Marshall never made any effort to enforce his subpoena. That was reported in an early case in 1808. The next time involved Andrew Johnson. And, the state of Mississippi was seeking to enjoin him performing a duty under a statute they claim is unconstitutional. They sought his testimony and some documents that he had. The court merely cited the Burr case and had no more to do with it. The third one is a miserable one involving a fellow named Vicksburg Babcock, who was personal secretary to President Grant. And Babcock was famous person because of the influence he had and all the machinations that he was in the deal, military supplies and all these other things after the war. As Grant's secretary as president, thought to be one of the great causes of the downfall of integrity in that administration. Babcock was indicted and by the United States. And President Grant was convinced of his innocence. History judges 99% against President Grant on that. They just feel that this was a bad deal. But because of his judgment, President Grant went to court in a private session for Salmon P. Chase, Chief Justice of the United States, and prepared an affidavit there and with counsel for both parties. And it was filed in the court. There were about 20 defendants. Babcock was the only one that was acquitted. He hadn't been acquitted yet. We find no other episodes or instances of the president testifying or being asked to testify or where anybody sought to compel him to testify.
Our friend told me that he thought they would do that. Our learned friend. His judgment, and he thought that there ought to be an agreement and do it by letter. The facts, because they've been known to everybody at the top all along. And they proceeded in that light. And he thought that they just ought to write a letter.
They should.
Well, two should agree.
Well, I'll tell you, this was my immediate fear when I heard of this business Friday. There's one other episode. You remember in 1953, Congressman Valdy threw Brownell and directly through the Senate committee sought to compel President Truman to come in and testify about Harry Dexter White. Made a big ruckus about it. President Truman, you'll recall, went on the radio one night. I was up here and worked on a speech with Dean Atkins and others. And among other things, said that, of course, it was preposterous to think that you could tell a former president any more than you could an incumbent president to testify about the matters of his office, and his either would erode the powers of the office equally. And that was the end of that. Now, the problem, I haven't been able to see that you could testify to anything that would be admissible anyway, Mr. President. This single exception, that you could say that, yes, he did come to me. It's not my personal knowledge. I was there. He came to me and asked and said, I've got all these problems. Can you loan me some money? Can you advise me what to do? I told him, I can't loan you any money. Why don't you go see Senator Kerr? He's your friend, and he's wealthy, and he may have some ideas. That would be admissible. However, I do not think that what Senator Kerr told you would be admissible, because it falls under the hearsay rule. I haven't been able to adequately brief that, but if that's not admissible, then there's really nothing that they have anyway. The problem that concerns me beyond that is if you get into the evidence, then your credibility in the eyes of the press and others might be before the jury. So you're caught in a switch either way. If there's a conviction, the jury didn't believe the president. If there's an acquittal, the president went down there and sprung his friend. So I think they're real, real difficult problems. Now, the other thing, we got a reference yesterday from the Securities and Exchange Commission involving some very serious allegations about Jim Quigley. I have no idea at this time whether there is any substance to them at all. But they have to do with contracts involving water purification equipment, and they involve a rather notorious fellow named Quace, Harold G. Quace. The substance of the allegations, which I don't, certainly not prepared to give any credence to at this time, except there's one serious problem in this. First, that Dr. Quace, has been I don't know if you've run across his name. He's approached a whole lot of people here, and we see his hand and all everything. It's said around town that he's got Quigley in his pocket. Second on...
Who is he now?
Oh, he's Quigley. He's just one of these
Who is Quigley?
Jim Quigley is a former congressman from Pennsylvania who was assistant secretary of ATW, moved to Interior to head up the consolidated reorganized
water. Yeah. Mm.
Right. On December 28th, a contract negotiator for Interior, working under Quigley, said Quigley called him and ordered him to prepare a contract for Dr. Quace's company. That Quace's bid was way above two other bids, one by Mel Parr for $60,000, one by Brewer, which is a big water equipment manufacturer. Both of those were exactly the same amount, $60,000. They prepared that and sent it into the office on December 30, Quigley called him, said, prepare, and ordered him, to, this is what he puts it, to prepare a contract for $198,000 and to bring it to his home that night. Did, he said, quickly there, signed the contract. Now, I called Stu Udall. I told him he couldn't discuss this with anybody, but I wanted first him to know it, and his department second, see whether he could add any light. Stu said three things. He said, first, we had about $20 million that had to be contracted for before the end of the year. That was between the urgency and the night. Two, that he has known Quigley. They came to Congress together in 1955. Just be amazed if there was any problem there. Three, that he thought I had to lead him on this, but he thought that these contracts might vary in the quality of their performance because the specifications were precise. So that one might really give you three times more than another. That's the problem is, in view of both the source and the nature of the allegations, we need to start an FBI.
I just sure would. What does SEC got to do with it?
Well, they've had an investigation of this Dr. Quace. They refer a lot of things over here to us. Mm. They picked this up in the course of their investigation.
Gossip?
Beg your pardon?
Gossip or the employees?
The first part was gossip, the part about Dr. Quace saying he's got Quigley in his vest pocket. The second part, they interviewed this contract negotiator. Now that guy, at least, is unhappy. And that's the best interpretation you can put on it.
Sure,
he's unhappy and kind of digging Quigley, you see.
I'd have somebody see him in the morning.
But we'll get right on. And then I'll wait to hear from you on the meeting.